Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Oh me, oh my, we are off and running for this 25th day of August 2020. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. Yes, indeed, that's also where we keep the chat room tucked away. If you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, then by all means, go by, pick out a screen name and a password if you never have before, and jump right in. Anatole and Dowhead and Squeaky are waiting on you. More will be popping by presently. Those are the early arrivers. You'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, takes the months that don't have R's in them off from space folding because it's just too darned hot. Yes. Hi, I'm Bob. I guess it's day two of the Republican National Clavern, the Cool Kids Clavern. That's pro. Steve in New York sending me a visual for a radio program. Part of the meme is Jer Jr., or Cucky Jerry, as Becky calls him, in profile. And a pool boy with the pool cleaning net off to his left. He layeth me beside pool water. His rod and his staff, they comfort me. That's the 23rd. That's the 23rd installment in the Book of Cucky Jerry. Yes. that's good. And, it was kind of weird last night because by the time the program was over, he was howling that he had not resigned, not in the name of Jesus, resigned as president and chancellor of FU, Falwell University. And then he resigned. I guess somebody proved to him that, in fact, they did have the relevant photography. Yes. Last night was weird. I took one for the team. Good God, by the time Kimberly Guilfoyle was done speaking, I expected an interdimensional portal to open and for her to start screaming, "There is only Zool! There is only Zool!" and some sort of red-eyed monstrous Trump to come through it and start biting the heads off of various and sundry maggots there in Charlotte, North Carolina. Oh, it just... The weirdness. Of course, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so I would like to extend some thank yous to the partial sponsors of the program who make this program possible. We're not selling anything to anyone here. Anybody's free to take the program whenever they want. Thank you very kindly to James in Spain, and to Mark and Mark. And thank you very kindly to Cecilia. Very kindly. Tonight's the fundraising goal is at $250. Thanks to all of our subscribers and a la carte contributors who make it possible for this program to continue to exist for lo these many years. No, as I was saying, I was left a little disappointed because I was anxious for the end of last night's white supremacy on parade extravaganza. I wanted to see how they would handle the cross lighting at the end of the program, but I guess that was invitation only. Because it just cut away there, and I knew there was more programming. I mean, what's a good Klan rally without a cross lighting? But there we were, and of course Nimrata Haley, the queen of the maggots, or at least the princess consort. Informing all of America that there's no such thing as racism in America anymore. My dear friend, Carol, who is not Carol Baker, different Carol. This is a Carol that I've known since, I think, first grade. Carol remarked that when Nimrata got around to announcing that she was a brown girl in a black and white world, that's when Carol reached the point of, just can't. What the fuck? Out of here. But Nimrata actually said that. The darling of Bonomo. Yes, yes, Nimrata, yes, is president of Poland. How are you today?
Oh, I'm just fine.
I wanted to ask you about the relations between United States And island nation of Bonomo. What are your thoughts as ambassador to UN? It's Moscow Morning Zoo Crew Drive Time Comedy Radio. No. We are listening to radio in the background, Madam Ambassador. Signal reaches here in Warsaw all the way from Moscow. But we were talking about Bonomo.
Oh, I like Bonomo just fine, you know. They got some nice beaches. They ain't as nice as the ones we got in South Carolina, but no beaches is.
Yeah, that Nimrata Haley. Maybe it's time to adjust her nickname. Well, we'll save that for another time. But yep, according to both Nimrata Haley, brown girl in a black and white world,
By God, that begs to have a song written, doesn't it?
And according to Senator Uncle Tim Scott, well, he's not, that, you know, not Uncle Tom, Uncle Tim. They are living proof that there is no racism in America. None. Zip, zilch, nada. It, you know, despite the fact that Jacob Blake lays in a hospital bed, having had nothing less than six duty rounds from the Kenosha, Wisconsin Police Department pumped into his back. Shoot him in the back, Gonez! Shoot him in the back! And having the world see it on video. His family, through their lawyer, announced that it will take a miracle if he ever walks. They held a news conference earlier today. CBS News reporting the 29-year-old black man was shot several times by police. There was overnight protesting and demonstrating in Wisconsin for, you know, good damned reason. And there was another guy who stepped to the podium last night there and announced that Democrats keep African Americans on the, and I quote, mental plantation. Yeah, he really said that. The mental plantation. The password is lickspittle. But this was tokenism at its very worst. And entirely to be expected. Because this is all about not what your usual political convention is about, but instead it is a praise fest for our Orange God Emperor. It was a tackier, low-rent version of a Nuremberg rally. Yeah, later in the evening, I got a note from Steve from All Around Great Guy, Steve from Georgistan, pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator as well, who said that they would have done better just to run the original Leni Riefenstahl copy of Triumph of the Will, to which I heartily agreed. I, at this point in time, award an ex post facto cowbell. Oh, yeah, cowbell, by the way, for Steve, for his He Layeth Me Beside Pool Water, his rod and his staff, they comfort me. Mm-hmm. It was a horrifying night. And then there are the McCloskeys of St. Louis, Missouri, who warned that the Negroes are coming for the suburbs and we won't have any suburbs left if we don't re-elect Donald Trump. Now, bear in mind, Black Lives Matter protesters were headed to the mayor's office that day because the mayor of St. Louis had just gotten done doxing some people who complained about the mayor's behavior. And for little to no reason whatsoever, the McCloskeys came out brandishing guns and pointed them at people. And these are lawyers, mind you, who should have no problem whatsoever comprehending the First Amendment to the Constitution. And they came out and brandished weapons. And, of course, were invited to speak at the Cool Kids Club rally. All three of those words being spelled with K's, of course. And delivering their Black Lives Matter is going to eat your mama's Bible diatribe. They are currently, if I understand correctly, charged with a crime. Felony brandishing, I do believe. That's still a felony. Mirabile dictu in the state of Missouri. And so it becomes rather easy to sort out why Mr. and Mrs. McCloskey would show up and deliver their racist screed there before the adoring faithful. Since they don't understand the First Amendment very well, they probably also think that their God Emperor has the power to pardon them of state charges in Missouri. Or at the very least, they hope that perhaps the governor of Missouri will pardon them. Of course, they have to be convicted first. Yes. Oh, for fuck's sake. But it was that all night long. James in Illinois with a note saying, Nimrata Haley, I may be brown, but I ain't no Mexican. There we go. And as we were watching, Agnes said, wait, she's a brown girl in a black and white world? She looks like she just got back from the beach. Ugh. Yeah. Of course, she is of South Asian extraction, and this might be a helpful moment to talk about, and Lord knows I'm not well-versed. Some members of the Horn Family Community Congregation are far more so. But the Indian subcontinent of South Asia has for thousands of years, remember, these are the folks who invented religion. It has been a melting pot of various and differing ethnicities, going from people whose skin is dark black through several shades and up to and including some fairly pale folk. And this is because the original Caucasians, that is to say, people who hailed from the Caucasus mountain region, also later to become known as, no kidding, Aryans, because, of course, the goddamn Nazis never had an original idea in their lives. Well, the Caucasian peoples drifted, migrated, down, wandered out of the Caucasus into the Indus River Valley and on into the Indian subcontinent. And they interbred along the way. And so there on the Indian subcontinent is an absolute hodgepodge, and I don't mean that in a bad way, of genetics. The same Caucasians, the Aryans, who came wandering down out of the Caucasus, also became the people who became known as the Medes, M-E-D-E-S, and the Persians, P-E-R-S-I-A-N-S, not that that was really called for. Whom we now know as the Iranians. Some of the Medes and the Persians being some of the just about the very original white folks.
And as a consequence, that kind of explains why Agnes would look at the screen and go, how in the hell is that woman a brown girl? Because, well, bless her heart, Nimrata Haley couldn't, she would pass with flying colors the ancient racist paper bag test. But, Lord, no. Of course not. No. Somebody had to raise the banner of racial grievance, because last night was racial grievance night at the Republican National Conclave. Sorry. And it fell to Nimrata Haley, who still apparently has some sort of political ambitions. We may, who knows, we may yet have some excitement. Nah, it's all, there's no way Mike Pencil Neck Geek's going to get bounced. No. Surely not. Don't call me Shirley. Ron, in Raleigh, speaking of Tim Scott of South Carolina, in the Big Tent Republican Party, Tim should sit down with the other members of the Senate Black Caucus. Talk about being lonely. Because there aren't any. Brother Deacon Asa says, I'd like to think of Nimrata Randhawa as 2020's Michelle Malkin. Pick out an Anglo first name that vaguely resembles your real first name, and marry a feller whose last name sounds sufficiently Anglo, and you're set for success among the ranks of a party who's eternally grieved about anchor babies. Remember how the pig fuckers were shrieking about how the McCloskeys are just a couple of Democrat lawyers? Yeah. And as far as the just part goes, that home that they were defending was one of the homes built as wedding gifts from the original Augustus Bush. As far as middle-class suburbia goes, if that mansion, and it is a mansion, defines middle-class suburbia, then we're all the Beverly Hillbillies. Yeah. Now, Billable Rick, Lenote, says, subject line, Kimberly Guilfoyle. Bob, let's not goon on Kimberly Guilfoyle too much. Is there such a thing? My God! Between her and Trader Tot, it looked like they had snorted the gross national product of Peru. They were doing everything but chewing the air gum and braying like Mr. Ed. They were hacking their way through the jungle carrying on a load of Peruvian marching powder. Let's not goon on Kimberly Guilfoyle too much. After all, she was giving a speech for the hearing impaired and had to talk very loudly because there was no sign language interpreter present at the convention. Yes, following in the footsteps of Saturday Night Live Weekend Update original interpreter for the hard of hearing, Garrett Morris. Tonight in the news! What I want to know, Billable Rick says, is what Gavin Newsom ever saw in that wackadoodle lady. Maybe she wasn't a maggot when they were married in the early 2000s. Yeah, maybe. She did sort of leap to the head of the class when it comes to sound bites, though. God, she did. She was making these faces while she was talking that looked like, really, as a priestess of Zul, she was about to leap into the audience and bite off a head or two, or maybe tear the head off a live chicken or something with her sharp, pointy teeth.
Ladies and gentlemen, leaders and fighters for freedom and liberty and the American dream, the best is yet to come.
And the best part of it all, as you can tell from the quality of the audio there, she was screaming it to an empty room.
because she was screaming it from Washington, D.C. all the way to Charlotte, North Carolina. It's going to be one of those nights. It was her big star moment. I'm ready for my close-up, Max. And she even had the hand gestures down. I think you could probably replace the audio there with a Laurel and Hardy handshake. And there's a gasp there at the beginning of the clip, if you didn't notice it. That wasn't me. That's her snorting. Say hello to my little friend. I wasn't sure that her real name wasn't Kimberly Montana.
Ladies and gentlemen, leaders and fighters for freedom and liberty and the American dream, the best is yet to come.
The echo is what makes it art. God damn it. Oh, Jesus. Meanwhile, keys to the kingdom. The re-coronation of the God Emperor is a little incomplete, Bob. The Republicans dragged out of mothballs old Alan Keyes. He's been a token for decades. Your buddy, Dave in the blind. Ring, ring. Sounds like he's right outside the damn door. A note from Silent R. Lamar. Brother Bob, help me out here. From my knowledge, black people moved to the cities because we could not afford traveling to super to the city. My father, who lived in East Texas, to Dallas for work. Suburb to the city. And travel time, 3 hours at 90-plus miles an hour. I've made the track. It's 3 hours at 70 miles an hour, and may I say the jobs were in the city. So to Trump followers, why would black people move back to the woods? I, as a black man, just want to be left alone and live the best way I can without your knee on my black neck. Understood, Silent R. Understood. Megan says, but why the fuck did she look like the evil queen in Snow White as she was poisoning the apple? Well, pretty is pretty does, Megan. Kimberly Guilfoyle, part der. Can you pot up Kimberly's speech a little louder? I can't hear her. Jesus Christ, they heard her on the moon, Billable Rick. Turn up the hearing aids, bub. And it's only going to get worse. Oh, this might work. Mike in Cascadia sent this along saying, Kimberly Guilfoyle's speech makes a lot more sense when you play it with North Korean propaganda music in the background.
Don't let the Democrats take you for granted. Don't let them step on you. Don't let them destroy your families, your lives, and your future. Don't let them kill future generations because they told you and brainwashed you and fed you lies that you weren't good enough. Like my parents, you can achieve...
No, I don't like your parents.
You can be that shining example to the world. Manifest and be the change in this country that you dream, that you hope, that you believe in. Stand for an American president who is fearless, who believes in you, and who loves this country and will fight for her. President Trump is the leader who will rebuild the promise of America and ensure that every citizen can realize their American dream. Ladies and gentlemen, leaders and fighters for freedom and liberty and the American dream, the best is yet to come.
There is only Zool! And just so that we can keep everything in proper perspective. This is the woman who broke up the marriage of Donald Trump Jr., not that it probably took much work, a marriage that involved some three small children and, of course, a wife. Don't you wish you were riding that motorcycle? And billable Rick, I was getting to it, but let's do it now. Donald Trump Jr., traitor tot, butthead. Did you see how beady Don Jr.'s eyes were last night? they looked like the eyes of a myopic water moccasin, and they were so watery. See, water moccasin. Don't try this at home. I wonder if Mar-a-Lago Mussolini had him tear gassed by federal troops just before he took the stage.
Just to set the scene, Junior, just to set the scene.
James in Illinois, Newsom Guilfoyle. Boy, howdy, that marriage ended not with a whimper, but with a 10-kiloton bang all over the front page of the Chronicle. There was cheating and abuse like you wouldn't believe, and Newsom was the newly minted mayor at the time. I was embarrassed for him, having just undergone my own pretty public divorce not long before that. And also, with the music in the background, Randy and P.A. We're having fun tonight. Randy and P.A. says, "Kneel to General Zod!"
Oh, God.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. "You owe me," says Ron and Raleigh. "That Kimmy clip just blew out my speakers. Pay when you can." What kind of speakers are we talking about, Ron? Don't be invoicing me for no floor standing clip horns or none of that shit. And of course tonight, we will have the stirring remarks. I'm not sure if they'll be in the original Transylvanian. If she does it in the original Transylvanian, we'll be less likely to know that she's plagiarized Michelle Obama again, of Melanoma Trump, the first presidential spouse ever to remove their clothing in exchange for money for the sexual gratification of total strangers. That'll be another first from the GOP, as Steve points out. We had the first speaker at the AFP, American Fascist Party Convention, who's the mistress of the president's son. Family values! Praise Jesus! Yeah. And then there's, this. The irony of Ronna Romney McDaniel banging the gavel to commence the opening ceremonies of the Republican convention, or Clavern conclave last night, was amazing, and yes, you could say it went viral. The Republicans started off the ceremony with the Ronna banging the gavel, which only seems appropriate since the nitwit Nerona is the king of the virus. Then the Ronna went on like a terrier as she dogged the Dems for having a subpar convention. She claimed the American people were not buying what the Democrats were selling. That's right, Ronna, the Democratic base of voters, was not buying into the three Republicans that were on their television the initial night of the Democratic convention. In case you have noticed Ronna, the vast majority of the country is not buying into the Repig Lickens right now either, save for the maggots. Personally, I did not watch much of the convention, and I'm a political junkie. I really don't think most Democrats care in general about watching a bunch of political theatrics, which amount to very little at the end of the day, because whatever ratings bounce a party receives following the fluff and stuff usually dissipates shortly after the convention closes. Unlike the maggots, Democrats are thinkers, and right now they're not up for a bunch of bullshit pomp and circumstance. In the end, the Democratic Party, that's Democratic Party, spent most of the convention tearing down the toddler who's torn down this country these last 4 years. This may not have been the conventional approach for a successful convention, but it worked for this time in history. Have no fear, Ronna. The Republican convention will garner great ratings because generally the maggots are not an introspective bunch. Many of them just can't sink their teeth into a good newspaper, considering most of them have no teeth and cannot read. Nor are they a lot full of thoughtful souls, but rather they're simply bottom feeders who thrive on Dear Leader. This has been Joey's Journal for Tuesday, the 25th day of August, with Giraffrey fishing from the top. Hear, hear. What a world, what a world, what a world, what a world. Ah, thanks a bunch, Dave. Irish Dave, I'm about to tell the second biggest lie. We all know what the first one is. The check's in the mail. Thank you. I will haunt the Horn mailbox for its arrival. Thank you very much. Oh, it's only a pair. They're Altec computer speakers and had to switch to my Boston Acoustics. Darn it. I hate it when I do that. Sorry. It's, once upon a time, there was a day when audio was sort of standardized, but that ship has sailed. Silent R. Lamar says, wake up call. In respect to America, white people, if you have colored friends, look them in their eyes and say, I'm going to miss you when you're dead. Because if Trump is reelected, more black people, more black lives will die. See, on our side of the political spectrum, that's a tragedy, Silent R. Lamar. On their side, it's a feature, not a flaw. Jude in the Great Northwest heard Kimberly Guilfoyle declare, he will fight for her! Really? While knowing Trump's disdain for women. Kimberly's shouting made this reference that Trump will fight for America using America in gendering America as female. Jude says, oh, help us. You know, ships are typically referred to as she and nations, too. Or at least it used to be that way. Do we still do that? Is that still a thing? Referring to... Right, no, what? I generally try not to let that happen. But with Kimberly Guilfoyle declaring there is only Trump, it didn't take very long at all for the Lincoln Project to get busy on it. I got it. You know, the Lincoln Project is not particularly better than other Republican chop shop messaging organizations. It's just that we're unused to having this sort of bare knuckled, bloody, win at all costs messaging on our side. Because we don't want to be as shitty as they are. But in this instance, well, we've talked about this before. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. These guys just want to get Trump out of office so that they can run a respectable conservative, say, in 2024. Now, given the behavior of the entirety of the Republican Congress, caucus in the Congress, and just about every other Republican in America, I don't know where they're going to find that person. But I suspect that is their plan. This is an unpaid product, political ad placement. Check it out.
Bitter, deceitful, bitter. deceitful, vengeful activists. They'll disarm
Trump's
you,
America in
you
75 seconds.
And invite MS-13 to live next door. Cops killed, children shot.
And they have run this beautiful place right into the ground. Abandoned buildings, liquor stores on every corner, drug addicts, guns on the street.
Pain and misery.
Crime, violence, and mob rule.
Spawns of Satan.
Eliminating everything that we love.
Intolerance, bigotry, people who attack others.
Anarchy and chaos on our streets.
Your family will not be safe.
The mob will try to destroy you.
Open borders, closed schools, human sex, drug traffickers, discarded heroin needles in parks.
Vengeful activists. They'll disarm you.
Hold on. Human sex, drug traffickers. Now, those words came from the mouth of Kimberly Guilfoyle. Was that a dog whistle to QAnon? Because, of course, the QAnon fantasy, it's not a conspiracy theory, it's a fantasy. The QAnon fantasy is that there is a secret underground cabal of satanic, cannibalistic pedophiles who kidnap children and take them underground to their, and I don't mean that in a metaphorical sense, they take them underground, under the earth, where they have sex with children and then kill and eat them. By the way, this goes trope goes back at least 150 years or so. I was reading an article about it just the other day. It was just repurposed for the maggot hive mind. But when Kimberly Guilfoyle says that, it's hard not to see that as, again, a dog whistle to QAnon.
Closed schools, human sex, drug traffickers, discarded heroin needles in parks, riots in streets, and blackouts in homes. Don't let them step on you. Don't let them destroy your families, your lives, and your future.
Chain you to conformity.
Burn down the foundations of our country to the ground.
Families clinging to pieces of wood.
Lives are being ruined and stolen.
You're not allowed to go to church. Rioting, looting, and vandalism. Anarchists have been flooding our streets. Small businesses are being torched by moms. It's madness.
It's a horror film, really. Nightmares are becoming real.
Yeah, Trump's America in 75 seconds. And yet, somehow or another, the malls are still open. The grocery stores' shelves are still, for the most part, stocked. And who writes this crap? Lee in New York pointing out, human sex drug traffickers. Only because the robot sex drug traffickers don't have advocates. Indeed, Lee. Lee adding, convention difference, DNC, young man told how to stutter less. RNC, old couple tells others, get off my lawn or we'll shoot you. Okay, Steve. Steve says, I'm not sure that she was dog whistling to Q since she probably can't even spell Q. Oh, it's quite the Titanic Tuesday, isn't it? Full speed ahead into that there iceberg! Before the anarchists can burn it down, the iceberg! Anarchists! Burning down our icebergs!
Mother.
I think Darlene in Connecticut says, I think they had five children, and I thought that Vanessa Trump bailed before Kimberly Gargoyle came along. Well, then again, there's the Apprentice contestant, Aubrey O'Day, who still calls Paramore Don Jr. her soulmate and is bashing the Gargoyle. But you got to be pretty messed up to think Don Jr. is your soulmate or even soulmate capable. But that's just me. You do you, Darlene. True. Well, maybe it was Aubrey O'Day who broke up the nuptial bliss. The Lincoln Project ad, according to James in Illinois, sounds like the original Ghostbusters when they were marched from the holding cell to the mayor's office. I have to ask, Steve says, at what point does Grandpa Simpson come out to talk about his union-busting activities by talking about an onion on his belt? Which was the fashion of the day.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, and there's another thing that's going to take place tonight, in addition to Melanoma's speech from the Rose Garden with all the K's in it, the KKK Rose Garden. She destroyed every rose bush planted by every First Lady going back to Woodrow Wilson's first wife in 1913. No kidding. Cut down flowering crabapple trees, which are lovely in the spring. Took them out in favor of turning the White House Rose Garden into the, what was that observation? The back entrance of a Sheraton. Randy in PA says, a rich professional that I deal with claims that more African Americans, he actually said blacks, will vote Republican because they've been neglected by the Democratic Party. Even if one admits that the treatment was bad from the Democratic Party, I reason that African Americans will see the clear choice between voting for the bad and voting for the horrible, and will rationally vote for the bad to avoid the horrible. Well, it's not just that, Randy. It's the devil you know. And if you concede, and I do not concede, that there are two devils running for president, the lesser devil is Joe Biden, because they've had 3 years to watch Donald Trump's racism in real damn time. Yeah. So, I mean, I was thinking about that earlier today, after the mental plantation line. You know, in addition to what the fuck does that even mean, there's also the inherent dismissiveness of talking about mental plantations. Can you be mentally whipped? Can you be mentally chained? Can you be mentally sold down the river? Can you be mentally taken from your home in Maryland and literally and mentally put on a boat and sent to the squishy, marshy Louisiana wilderness? Can that even happen? Because I don't think it can. I think when you say something like mental plantation, you are dismissing the shared reality of the actual plantation. Because you see, there's been a trope running through Trump America for a while now, and his boot-licking acolytes. This story goes back a little ways. It was 2 months ago when noted hog deballer and wearer of bread bags on her shoes, Joni Ernst, appeared on CNN and was asked about Donald Trump and his Confederate monument obsequy. And she answered as follows.
Friday night, and how he characterized what's happening in this country. Take a listen.
Our nation is witnessing a merciless campaign to wipe out our history, defame our heroes, erase our values,
and you know, heroes like Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee.
No movement that seeks to dismantle these treasured American legacies can possibly have
the treasured legacy of the founder of the Klan, Nathan Bedford Forrest.
Senator, as somebody who's going to be on the ballot with the president in November, are you comfortable with that?
Well, I think that there is a great level of frustration across the United States all the way around. And as a combat veteran, as you stated, someone who has served this great nation, I truly believe we do live in the greatest nation on the face of the planet. And we do have blemishes in our history. And we need to come together and have some very hard discussions about our past. But the great thing about this nation is that we can learn from those blemishes.
You see, slavery was just a blemish in the greatest history in the country, in the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, in the universe, forever under God. Just a blemish. You know, it's like a, it's like one of those little zits that forms up right there, you know, where the side of your nose, it joins up to your face. And it really, really hurts. And you can't really get your fingers at it to get to so that you can to squeeze the little fucker and make it go snap and shoot out against the mirror. You can't do that with those kind of blemishes.
Slavery. Blemish. I'd be tempted to say that that's really all you need to know about how maggots feel about slavery, but, well, it isn't all you need to know. No. Where'd that one go? Because, no, that's not it either. Oh, tell me that. Darn it. Did I get rid of it? Well, it was a public meeting in Mississippi where a woman, a Trump supporter, spoke up about Confederate iconography and said, "I don't know what we're complaining about. The slaves, they fed slaves. The slaves got everything they wanted for free. Because you see, there's a fundamental disconnect between the way that aggrieved white people view our past, the most hateful and monstrous aspects of our past, and how decent human beings deal with it. Abraham Lincoln's Secretary of State was that Seward? The Secretary of State William H. Seward. It's often overlooked that on that night in April when Abraham Lincoln was murdered by a white supremacist, that another of his co-conspirators attacked William Seward and very nearly succeeded in killing him. He did survive, however. And he was a politician from New York. And in the years prior to the Civil War, there were a number of normal, ordinary, everyday, friendly relationships between Northern politicians and Southern ones. But William H. Seward had come around to the abolitionist way of thinking And that is to say that he realized that slavery was never going to end on its own, and it had to be ended once and for freaking all. But he took a trip along with his wife, and you have to understand, we're talking about the 1850s. And so it would have been partially by rail and to a certain extent by carriage. And when they got out of D.C. and started down into Virginia, you know, a lot of the interstate highways that we have today follow the old post roads. Hey, why do we call them post roads? Because they were roads that were designed for carrying the mail. But as they got down into Virginia, William Seward and his wife began to see the state of human beings who lived in perpetual bondage. And they were physically sickened by it. They were nauseated by it. Poverty that could not even begin to be imagined even among the poorest of poor whites back home in New York was the permanent lot in life of slaves in Virginia. Because in Virginia, you know, when we tend to think of the slavery South, we tend to think of places like South Carolina and Alabama and Georgia and Guadalupe. But Virginia was a shithole misery for the vast majority of the people who lived there. The number of people, white people, who lived well in Virginia was a teeny, tiny, minuscule, micro percentage of the overall population. And while they had planned to go on down and visit some dear friends in the South, Mr. and Mrs. Seward turned around and went back home. Because they could not bear, they could not abide, not just to see, but to in any wise participate in a system that reduced human beings to such levels of abject, almost indescribable misery. And yet to this day, we have white people, Republicans, maggots. Remember Duck Doofus, who talked about the slaves singing in the fields and how happy they were in Louisiana? Yeah. There's a disconnect with our own history. And your garden variety maggot cannot confront that reality without some sort of a caveat. Yeah, but that's over. Well, my family, I ain't never owned no. You get the point. But that's it. As someone who has always studied history with an eye toward understanding what actually happened, I don't understand them, but the thing is, they are so deeply invested in a myth of kindly old Mars reaching into his own pocket to make sure everybody ate real good down in the quarters. That they can't even begin to fathom how bad it was. Or they'll offer up some other bullshit trope. Well, there was Irish slaves too.
No, there weren't. Indentured servitude is not the same thing as bond chattel slavery. It's not even remotely similar. Damn. Billable Rick, who also comes from Iowegia, as Joni Ernst does, says, it sounds like Joni Ernst has brought Ms. South Carolina on her staff to help her answer difficult questions like the one asked about Ernst's position on Confederate monuments. Actually, Ms. South Carolina's answer to the beauty pageant question was more coherent than Ernst's answer. Let's hope that the Iowa female Dem challenging Ernst this year modifies the hog deballer of Ernst to allow for that machine to be used on Ernst. Oh, that's cruel. It's time to go, Joni. Off you go. Stage right with Chachi at the GOP convention. Leah, New York, singing in the fields. Do they think it's called the blues because it's their favorite color? Well, no, the Democrats is blue, and that's why the blues is blue, because they're trapped there on that confounded mental plantation. And listening to Joni, Jude says, listening to her voice today is the first time I heard the cadence of channeling a Valley Girl. Well, I heard a faux upscale Iowegian. She sounds like, and you know, that accent predominates up through Wisconsin, Minnesota, the Dakotas, Idaho, up into Canada. And we first really had it put in our faces by Sarah Palin. Yeah. Megan says, I can't wait for Melanoma's speech, you know, to hear about all her struggles as a black woman in Chicago. I was born a poor black child. Yeah. Well, he never would have agreed to, but they could have at least asked Steve Martin to reprise his role from The Jerk. Right? But while this, all of this white grievance is taking place, a family sits and waits in Wisconsin. Waiting to see what the fate of Jacob Blake will be. His mother spoke. This is a lengthy clip.
My son has been fighting for his life.
Can you talk a little louder?
And we really just need prayers. As I was riding through here, through the city, I noticed a lot of damage. It doesn't reflect my son or my family. If Jacob knew what was going on as far as that goes, the violence and the destruction, he would be very unpleased. So I'm really asking and encouraging everyone in Wisconsin and abroad to take a moment and examine your hearts. Citizens, police officers, firemen, clergy, politicians, do Jacob justice on this level and examine your hearts.
Yes.
We need healing. As I pray for my sons, healing physically, emotionally, and spiritually, I also have been praying even before this for the healing of our country.
Yes.
God has placed each and every one of us in this country because he wanted us to be here. Clearly you can see by now that I have beautiful brown skin, but take a look at your hand, and whatever shade it is beautiful as well.
Amen. Yes.
How dare we hate what we are?
Yeah.
We are humans. God did not make one type of tree or flower or fish or horse or grass or rock. How dare you ask him to make one type of human that looks just like you? I'm not talking to just Caucasian people. I am talking to everyone. White, black, Japanese, Chinese, red, brown. No one is superior to the other. The only supreme being is God himself. Please, let's begin to pray for healing for our nation. We are the United States. Have we been united? Do you understand what's going to happen when we fall because a house that is against each other cannot stand?
Amen.
To all of the police officers, I'm praying for you and your families. To all of the citizens, my black and brown sisters and brothers, I'm praying for you. I believe that you are an intelligent being just like the rest of us. Everybody. Let's use our hearts, our love, and our intelligence to work together to show the rest of the world how humans are supposed to treat each other. America is great when we behave greatly. Thank you.
Hold on. No.
Seems pretty clear to me. And I understand the religious language in which that plea is couched. But the essential nature of her plea is a humanist plea, because it is a plea for us all to recognize the common bond that joins us all. We are not joined by a common bond of faith or religion. We are joined by the common bond of our humanity. And we must understand that in the white supremacist, in the racist mind, they reject that bond. And it's worth reminding that it is largely white evangelical religious outfits, for instance, that reject science, that reject the nature of the origins of the human species. Because there is no doubt among people of knowledge, learning, inquiry, that humanity began in Africa. At one point in time, what would become humanity was reduced to a group of about 2,000 individuals. And over the course of time, they fanned out through the African continent, into the Arabian Peninsula, up around the Levant, into Anatolia, up through the Caucasus and into Europe, along the Asian coastline. Remember, the oldest extant group of humans on this planet are to be found among the Aboriginal peoples of Australia. And when she paraphrases Lincoln, a house divided against itself cannot stand, she's not necessarily talking about the United States of America. She is talking about humanity writ large. Because from the time that sedentary agriculture began, we have been with war with our very own existence. And her plea will be heard by people of goodwill and taken to heart. Unfortunately, in 2020 in the United States of America, people of goodwill, for the most part, does not include anyone who plans to vote for Donald J. Trump. All you had to do was watch last night. Or if you've the stomach for it, watch tonight, tomorrow night, and Thursday. There is no goodwill in there. The screaming, the shouting, that montage that the Lincoln Project produced just from last night is sufficient to prove the point. And now we have learned that Marjorie Taylor Greene, the QAnon goonie, the 9/11 truther, a woman who claimed that the murder in 2017 of Heather Heyer was an inside job to further the agenda of the elites. Someone who believes in Pizzagate. A woman who will, barring a miracle, wind up in the Congress, in the House of the House of Representatives, announced today with a picture of the invitation. The president cordially invites you to attend his acceptance speech of the Republican nomination on Thursday evening, August 27th in Washington, D.C., the White House. Yeah. Now, if Kimberly Gargoyle screaming about what was the term? That madness that she babbled. If that was a dog whistle, this is a foghorn. They're not going to distance themselves from the toxic Q fantasy. They just enfolded them inside the Republican maggot plague blanket. Marjorie Taylor Greene tweeting,
I'm honored and thrilled to be invited to attend President Trump's acceptance speech Thursday evening at the White House. I'm also equally excited to vote for him again November 3rd, and I'm working hard all over Georgia to help him win.
Lord God. Let's contrast, says Steve in New York. Look at her grace, love, and forgiveness. Jacob's mama. When she is the victim versus what we hear from the far right wing. Six rounds. In his back. The reason, historically, that we so despise shooting someone in the back is that it is an admission that the person shot was absolutely no threat whatsoever to the shooter. And, of course, Jacob Blake was no threat. Seven times, I'm sorry. No pepper spray. No taser. Went right to the guns. By the way, we're right at 6 months since the slaughter of Breonna Taylor. And that investigation is housed in the office of the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, who says that they're busily investigating, when in fact that self-same Attorney General will be attending the Republican National Conclave. Bless her heart, Oprah comes in for some often earned criticism. You know, we can never thank Oprah enough for foisting Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz on the world. But she is so incensed over the slaughter of Breonna Taylor as she lay sleeping in her bed that Oprah has funded 26 billboards around the Louisville area to make sure that this issue doesn't disappear. Earlier this month, WLKY-TV in Louisville said, for the first time ever, just last week, Oprah Winfrey dedicated the cover of her magazine to someone other than herself, Breonna Taylor. Now that cover will be all over Louisville in the form of billboards, big and small. She and the O Magazine team say they are amplifying Taylor's story and the fight for justice by erecting 26 billboards across the city. That's one for every year of Breonna's life. There's a photograph that is that has gone national. Breonna Taylor, an EMT, standing in front of the seal of Louisville, holding a bouquet of roses from Kroger's and smiling a warm and lovely smile. I suspect that might be the day that she got her certification. Gunned down by three white cops. One of the three has been fired, the other two... are they still on administrative leave? And Bupkis. And still nothing. Well, good on you, Oprah. Leave those billboards up for as long as it takes. The billboards all say, demand that the police involved in killing Breonna Taylor be arrested and charged. And invites people to visit a website called untilfreedom.com. One suspects, because you see, the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, if he doesn't have the stomach for the work, and being a maggot, it's pretty clear that it's not really a matter of stomach, he just doesn't have the desire. He has the power to step aside and appoint a special attorney general to get the job done. But if he does that, he may not get the outcome that he wants. God. God. On the other hand, then, there's Tony Vullo of DeBary, Florida. His neighbor had put a Biden sign in his yard on his own property. And Tony Vullo claimed that it was blocking his maggot sign. So according to news station WESH, Vullo ripped out his neighbor's Biden sign and threw it across the yard. The neighbor then said, what the hell did you do that for? That's when Tony Vullo, American patriot, supporter of Donald Trump, took a swing at his neighbor. Another neighbor saw it all happen. And they called the Volusia County Sheriff's Office. They came and arrested Tony Vullo. They charged him with battery. When he was interviewed by WESH, Tony Vullo told him, yeah, I went to jail for Mr. Trump, for our president. I think it was unfortunate and I was wrong to throw the sign. There's not going to be any problem with us. Well, kind of depends on how the civil suit goes. Yeah, I kicked my neighbor's ass for Donald Trump. Don't you remember back there in 2016 when he was running to make America great again? Don't you remember? He said, beat the hell out of him. I'll pay your legal bills. Maybe he'll cover your civil suit damages there when that goes final there, Tony Vullo. Nah, he'll leave you flapping in the wind, you stupid maggot. Of course he will. And as we discussed, Jacob Blake, Ron in Raleigh points out, yeah, by the way, dimwit Donnie still hasn't said a word about the cowardly gunning down of Jacob Blake on you-know-who's program today. A caller, White, of course, said that if the fella had just done as he was told, he'd still be alive. Why should he have done anything except go about his business since he was not guilty of any crime? That. Cynthia said, notes, and that so-called cop shot Jacob Blake with three kids right there in the car, too, like he cared about the safety of anyone. I hope they prosecute that trigger-happy cop and send him to prison for the rest of his effing life. 'Cause see, in any other circumstance, that's called reckless endangerment of a child. I don't know if that applies to cops. So much doesn't. Limited immunity and all of that. Our pal Andy the Angry Jew sent this along. I had it in the stack and it works out nicely. Remember the McCloskeys? from the convention. If you don't reelect Donald Trump, the Negroes will come to your neighborhood, too. Well, it turns out that the McCloskeys share a property line with the Central Reform Jewish Congregation of St. Louis. Their northern wall, because, of course, the McCloskeys have a wall. Andy said, it makes me proud to be a Jew. And you should be. Rabbi Susan Talva, runs the shop there. And among other things they do with their property at the Central Reform Congregation, they keep a garden. And they raise produce. On any given year, they supply some 2,000 pounds of fresh produce to the local food pantry. Trying to remember the last time I heard of a Southern Baptist church doing that. Never! And so, in anticipation of the coming of Rosh Hashanah, which is the Jewish New Year, the synagogue, well, they had some apple trees, and they brought in some beehives. Now, I know some people are deadly allergic to bees, but I love honeybees. I recognize the roles that things like hornets and wasps and fucking yellow jackets play in nature, but I don't get all warm and fuzzy about them. But bees I love. I remember way back when the babies were little, walking into the garden and sticking my hand out and just letting honeybees that were zooming around the blooming corn tassels, just letting the bees, and they were just covered in pollen. There was pollen stuck all over them. Because they're good that way, pollinators. But I just stuck my arm out because I was trying to teach the kids, you know, you don't have to be afraid of them. Just be respectful and kind. And I stuck my arm out. I'm not allergic. And let those honeybees, and when I stuck my arm out, they just started landing on my arm. I mean, it was a real live moment of zen. They walked around. They didn't sting. I remained very still. I just said hello to them. Fly away, another one land on. And Doodle, our littlest, began to cry. Oh, Daddy, she said, they're going to sting you. And in a very small, still voice, I said, no, they're not. They're not afraid. And I'm not afraid of them. And you shouldn't be either. These bees are our friends. But, well, I withdrew my arm. The bees flew away. Because it was very much upsetting, a little 3-year-old doodle. But I love bees, and there at the Central Reform Synagogue of St. Louis, they love bees too, and they put up some beehives. Because at Rosh Hashanah, you eat apples and honey. And the children in the congregation there were, oh, they were so excited. Because for their Rosh Hashanah that year, they were going to grow and harvest their very own apples and honey. Right there on the grounds of the Central Reformed Synagogue. Then one morning, Rabbi Talva went out and found that all of their beehives had been dashed into pieces. Who had done it? Well, Mr. McCloskey had done it. Yeah. And he left a note. All caps.
Attention!
Gosh, at least he didn't say, Achtung!
Attention! This is private property. This structure constitutes a trespass. If the remainder is not fully removed and all evidence of its construction cleaned, removed, and abated by 10 a.m. Monday, April 8th, a restraining order will be obtained and we will seek damages and attorney's fees.
Signed, owners Mark and Patricia McCloskey, 1 Portland Place, area code 314-721-4000. That's area code 314-721-4000. Because, you see, property lines are funny things. Because in past years, despite the use of things like transits, establishing boundaries had not only science to do with it and mathematics, but art as well. Good God, if you're a title lawyer in the state of West Virginia, it'll drive you mad. 100 poles to the old oak tree planted by Grandpa Thumblefuck. Hence 50 feet to a babbling stream with a red rock in it. And none of that shit's been there for 200 years. And so we go by meets and bounds. And every deed says X number of acres, more or less. But by God, those beehives were 6 inches over onto the McCloskey's property, and he destroyed them! Because, Achtung, Juden! This is private property. What kind of low-down, miserable, shit-eaten, filthy, rotten, dirty, pathetic, failed attempts at a human being do you have to be to destroy a beehive that will provide honey for children to celebrate New Year's? Rabbi Talva said, at the time, we decided not to complain because it was on their property. They're both attorneys. They've caused a lot of trouble for people. The advice we got was, let it go. We live next door to these people that have guns and we have children. But every once in a while, you have to speak up and say, enough. And this is long before they brandished deadly weapons at peaceful protesters. Before they ever did that, they had earned themselves a long and well-documented history of neighborhood feuds and litigation. Threats like the ones they leveled to the synagogue there. They went so far as to file a lawsuit to force the neighborhood association to enforce a damn near unenforceable rule against unmarried couples living in their neighborhood. Why? Aw, come on. This is easy. Why? Because a gay couple had moved into the neighborhood. Now, the McCloskeys, to hear them tell it, especially last night, were beset by angry blacks ready to destroy our home. But Rabbi Talva, you know, whose people wrote the book that so many Christians thump but never read, well, she's conversant on an intimate level with what is referred to in the Septuagint as the Decalogue, the 10 words, the 10 no-nos. One of which, if you like your English King James style, Elizabethan, makes clear in no uncertain terms, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Often reduced to thou shalt not lie, but that's not what it says. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Well, you know, them Black Lives Matter protesters, they weren't our neighbor. They don't live in our neighborhood. They ain't part of our neighborhood association. But last night, they bore false witness against them. How do we know? Because the woman who is intimately familiar with the meaning of that injunction said the protesters there, the Black Lives Matter protesters back on the evening of June 28th, were peaceful. She didn't just assume that. She knew that. Because, among other things, many members of the Central Reformed Congregation had marched with the Black Lives Matter protesters and knew, because they were in amongst the protest, that it was, in fact, a peaceful protest. And, in fact, Rabbi Talva is one of those respectable religious people who lives her faith. And in point of fact, she works closely with the Black Lives Matter community in St. Louis. All the way back in 6 years ago, my God, when Michael Brown was gunned down on the streets of Ferguson, not too awfully far away, Rabbi Talva didn't mince any words, and she didn't shirk her duty, and she didn't hide, and she spoke out on behalf of Michael Brown at the scene in Ferguson. In 2017, she opened the doors of the synagogue to people seeking refuge when a march against police brutality became violent. That's about the same time there was a hashtag going around the area. Wait for it. Get this. In case you were wondering who that was that you saw last night at the conclave. Hashtag gas the synagogue. Gas? Synagogue? Really? Really. And so the McCloskeys do, in fact, still face charges. Unlawful use of weapons and pointing firearms at protesters. Class E felony. Now, last night you may have noticed that Mark McCloskey, the guy who smashes beehives, said, the protesters were not charged with a crime, but she, meaning Kimberly Gardner, the St. Louis circuit attorney, she charged us with felonies for daring to defend our home that wasn't under attack. And getting right to the heart of things, Rabbi Talva said, these are the values that this administration has been putting forward, values that sow hate among people. They stand for a kind of white supremacist system. Our resistance is to love each other. What a beautiful human being Rabbi Susan Talva is. Having seen them on TV last night, she said, it's so upsetting that they have a national audience. It's upsetting we make heroes out of people who hate. As to the beehive, she said, you know, he could have picked up the phone and said, hey, those beehives are on my property. And we would have just moved them. But that's not the way white supremacists behave. No, no, no. What's the term? In the Jewish mystical tradition, the Kabbalah, there is a tale or an idea or myth, if you will, the Lamed Vav, the 36. The idea being that on Earth, at any given time, there are 36 people alive whose essential goodness keeps God from just giving up and killing everybody. It is said that the Lamed Vav are so humble that they would never announce themselves and may not, in fact, even know that they are among the Lamed Vav, if I'm saying it right. Authors like José Luis Borges screwed that up too, I'm sure. Picked up on the idea. And it has its manifestations in other cultures as well. In ancient Greece, there was a philosopher who walked around the countryside with a lamp looking for one wise man. But those little moments of decency, well, they may be what they are. And it may be that rather than keeping God from killing us all, they're the ones with the power to keep us from killing each other. Thank you, Will, in Chicago. Diogenes. Diogenes was the one with the lamp in ancient Greece. Lamed Vav, Lamed, the Lamed Vav. I knew I'd screw it up. Can I get points for the effort? Lamed Vav. Pluralized to Lamed Vavniks. And it's wrapped in its own conundrum because no one who would ever even think about being one can possibly be one. But those moments of decency. Yeah, thank you, Randy MPA. Diogenes. You know, there's so many of those old coots, I just can't keep them all straight. Socrates standing there, sitting there, having just quaffed the cup of hemlock, looks at his followers. All this time, Socrates, what is truth? Socrates, what is beauty? Never, not one of you assholes ever said to me, Socrates, hemlock is poison. Oh, God, that sounds good. Will says, would that I could get you something from Milt's Barbecue for the Perplexed. Kosher barbecue. God, that could upset the earth. Well, I mean, you know, brisket. This is brisket. Yeah. Darn tootin'. Oh, and we got a little bit of a news update. Let me check mail real quick. Lee in New York letting me know, apples and honey are symbols for a sweet year at Rosh Hashanah. I thought it was something like that. Sounds nice. Chris in Germany sent us a little jar of French truffle flavored honey, and you can actually see the little flecks of truffle in it. Oh, my heavenly days. You want to talk about special? Woo! Bill in Allentown. Hey, Bob, why did the McCloskeys buy a house right next door to a synagogue? Well, you'd have to see the photos of the house. There was a big spread in St. Louis House Beautiful or whatever the publication is. This thing is an ornate Baroque. I know. Just leave the pun alone. It's huge. And they used their vast wealth to try to make it, in the car world, you'd say return it to stock. And spent a fortune. Because I'm sure that synagogue was not there back when the Bush heir, I think it was one of the daughters of August Bush, built it. And it fell into disrepair, and they bought it, the McCloskeys did, and spent a horse-gagging wad of money. But why? The larger question is, why not just be a decent human being about it? Well, here's the answer. And it's a lawyery answer. Way, way, way back when I was a little boy, our next door neighbor, we didn't have a fence between our properties. And we were always good neighbors. Friendly like. But eventually she wanted a dog. Our neighbor did. And she didn't want it running all over the neighborhood. That was respectful. But again, boundary lines are funny. Fuzzy, even. And so when they had their chain link fence put up, the chain link fence left a foot of their property on our side of the fence. And so, until the day she died, they always mowed that 1 foot strip of the property that was on our side of the fence. Because there's an ancient principle in the law called adverse possession, also known as squatter's rights. In most jurisdictions, if you openly and notoriously inhabit a piece of property for 20 years, it's yours. I mean, this is something that comes down from the merry oldie English common law. And so, by mowing that strip of grass, they were asserting that they had not abandoned it. And the only time that they did get kind of burned up was, you know, my job was mowing the yard. Mowed a lot of yards when I was a kid. And I'd just run straight down the fence line. And then before it was time for me to mow again, they'd come back and mow. Because I had apparently, in my small and childish way, asserted some sort of control or dominance of that foot-long strip, that foot-wide, 75-foot-long strip of grass. Well, what the McCloskeys were doing, because they're shit-eating pettifoggers, those beehives were technically on his property. So without being a good neighbor, he went over and smashed them because it was his right so to do. This is what happens when you get all wrapped up in the letter of the law and not the spirit of it. If you have an apple tree, see, we were talking about apples and honey earlier. If you have an apple tree and its branches extend over the property line and apples fall on the other person's property, they are their apples. Because there is no discipline, no study on the planet that is more obsessive compulsive than the law. Stockton Larry in the chat room says, but don't good fences make good neighbors? Well, that comes from Robert Frost's Mending Wall. And it's curious because Robert Frost, the poet, puts that line, good fences make good neighbors. Pepperidge Farm remembers. He puts that line, good fences make good neighbors, in the mouth of an asshole. And, you know, if you live next door to an asshole, I guess you need a fence. But that's why he smashed it. Because he was afraid that, as Brother Deacon Asa pronounces the word, and based on Lewis Black, the Jews would try to take some of their property because, you know, for fuck's sake. Then again, McCloskey is not exactly one of the old tribal patronymics. And I don't think they were members of one of the lost tribes or anything. And so if, in fact, Diogenes was to wander by the McCloskey house with his lamp, he would find no honest people there. James in Illinois says, the house, they probably bought it on a foreclosure sale. Possible. It was in a state of considerable disrepair. The Last of the Just by Andre Schwartz-Bart, Flavio tells us. There's a beautiful novel about the Lamed Vav. Wait a minute. Did I just screw it up again? Lamed Vav. Sorry, I didn't mean to pull you into my error, Flavio. The Lamed Vav There's a beautiful novel about the Lavid Vav called The Last of the Just, written in 1951 about the Holocaust. There was a movie made of it. And he says, Andre Schwarzbart, Lamed Vav, not Lavid Vav. Well, let us not stand on being rule oriented, shall we? What a Titanic Tuesday. We are closing in on the third hour of the program. And we had 2:50 to go. Jeremy took us down to 2:45. Thank you, Jeremy, in Vermont. So we can finish yesterday with $45. And then we'll keep on at it. Oh, okay. Will says, I had a typo. Lamed Vavnik is correct. Yay! I'm so happy when it turns out I didn't screw up. Thank you, Will. Thank you. There's the article. Yeah. STL Mag, if you want to see this pile of bricks. Ralph's serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. STLMag.com. A decades-long renovation returns a Midwestern palazzo to its original glory. This thing is dated August 16th, 2018, barely a year ago. And, wow. You know, it's all stone, and it is quite definitely Italianate. When attorneys Mark and Patty McCloskey bought their home in February of 1988, it was the color of cigarette ashes. Still dirty from the days when St. Louis lay under a blanket of coal smoke. The home's Carthage marble facing had quarter-inch thick carbon on it in some places, Mark says. Oh, Jesus, no wonder they love Trump and Trump loves him. This is that ugly, tacky, baroque. If you go to STL Mag and type in, I don't know, McCloskey, there are photos there. Yeah, I know. Yeah, mispronouncing Hebrew. Lee in New York says, at this rate, you'll never be ready for your bar mitzvah, Bob. Oh, don't I know it. Oh, there's a photo there of Mark and Patty standing on their on the landing of their marble staircase. Frescoes in the ceiling. Baroque highfalutin bullshit all around them. Open wooden beamed ceilings. It's quite the pile of rocks. Oh, no, math. 2018's 1 year ago. I'm doing my best to make 2020 go away, Randy. Thank you for that. Me and Cyphron. Well, at least I can sort out, thanks to women standing. We are now down to $35 to go to finish yesterday. Thank you. A dining room where you'd be afraid to sit on the chair. And lots of glass and carrying on. And, well, go have a look if you want. At least they didn't shoot anybody. That way they're not likely to have a judgment entered against them that might find them evicted from their palatial digs. See inside the palace near Forest Park. Ugh. Well, that's the one thing I was wondering about, Will. Did they put the beehives back up? Because Will says, I would hope that couple has a visit from bees. I hope they put the hives back up. Ralphs took a look and said, oh my God, the tacky artwork. Jack in Shreveport, so are you saying it's the kind of place that if a person went into it a bit too drunk, they'd lose their cookies just from looking around? Hell, I'm stone cold sober, and I'm a little bit nauseated. But then again, I don't much care for that architectural style. Yeah, I better check the streamers. Yeah, we're roll. Oh no! Shit. Well, I can happily announce that there will be no podcast, or unhappily announce there will be no podcast. For some reason or another, and I got to sort it out, sometimes when I press record, it don't record. Damn it. So this will be another one of those missing programs. If you're in communication with anybody who listens to the program in delay, you'll just tell them that they missed a great show. Not on their account, but on mine. Damn it! Well, maybe Bob down in North Carolina has a copy. I'll have to check in. Son of a gun! And there's three buttons I click at the beginning of every program on each interface. And I clicked all three on both. But they did not stay clicked. Shit. Rat fart. Subject line late. Jeremy in Vermont says, I wanted to award you a very late cowbell for last night. Your explanation of Jerry Falwell Jr., his cheating wife, the pool boy, and the Garden of Eden explanation. It had me in shortage of laughter, especially the, wait, what, we're naked, after Adam ate the fruit from his dirty wife. Thank you. You're more than welcome, Jeremy. And just wish I was as good as I've only been doing this for 15, 16 years. Oh, that's frustrating. I mean, I could start now, but we'd only have an hour. Let's try it again. Yeah, hi, podcast listeners. We just had 2 hours of awesome radio that didn't get recorded. Sorry about that. I started the program and started the recording, and it didn't keep recording. I'll keep trying to do better. After all, Melanoma's speaking tonight, and we all know her motto, be best, blah. I wouldn't even have looked had Randy and PA not said there was a slight streaming glitch. I thought I was listening to an old program in fallback mode. No. You're fully in the present. Oh, regarding honeybees, Brother Deacon Asa says, Libtalker uses platform to anthropomorphize insects at the expense of patriotic Americans. And as to the pile of rocks there in near Forest Park in St. Louis, Brother Deacon Asa says, let's not pretend it's such a hot, highfalutin house, Bob. 1.7 mil will buy you a fixer-upper in Vancouver, even with the exchange rate. One Portland Place, St. Louis, Missouri, 63108. The Zestimate, the Zillow estimate, 1,719,342 bucks. Off the market. You know, I get the idea it might go on the market. Bob, stop telling us you didn't record the program. Is this program a repeat of the lost June 10th program? Okay, beam me up. There's no sign of life down here. No, sadly, that's... It's going to be like that one Beatles cover. That there were only a few copies of. Nope, no copy of this one. Damn it. Exactly, Will in Chicago. The interior of the house reminds me of a line from a Robert B. Parker Spencer novel. The university president's office looked like a successful Victorian brothel. Yeah, those are good novels, too. No wonder Trump would feel at home with the McCloskeys. That's the first thing I thought when I originally saw the article from STL Mag. This looks every bit as tacky as somewhere that Donald Trump would live. I mean, hell, you could get a crane and perch Kimberly Gargoyle on a cornice, and she'd be right at home. Get it, Kimberly Gargoyle? Thank you, Darlene. I didn't realize that. Randy from PA pointing out Diogenes and Green Lantern comic characters. It's a recurring theme, as the Green Lantern characters in DC Comics are partially based on the Greek myth of Diogenes. Now we dipped. Lord, there's so much stuff out there. Sparky's been tracing or following the ongoing saga of the aftermath of the super spreader event there in Sturgis, South Dakota. From the LA Times, the hundreds of thousands of bikers who attended the Sturgis motorcycle rally may have departed western South Dakota, but public health departments in multiple states are trying to measure how much and how quickly the coronavirus spread in bars, tattoo parlors, and gatherings before people traveled home to nearly every state in the country. And you know, it only takes one. Especially if they have depraved hearts and don't care where they don't care where they spread the disease. From the city of Sturgis to health departments in at least six states, health officials are trying to track outbreaks from the 10-day rally that ended August 16th. They faced the task of tracking an invisible virus that spread among bar hoppers and rallygoers who then traveled to over half of the counties in the United States. Man, isn't it going to be something when the ACC and the SEC start to play in the football? You want to get a case of the turtle squirts? Anonymous cell phone data indicates that 61% of all the counties in the United States have been visited by someone who went to Sturgis. That makes Sturgis, as the LA Times article notes, a travel hub comparable to a major U.S. city. Navin Vembar, co-founder of Camber Systems, said, "Imagine trying to do contact tracing for the entire city of Washington, D.C., but you also know that you don't have any distancing, or the distancing is very, very limited. The masking is limited. It all adds up to a very dangerous situation for people all over the place. Contact tracing becomes dramatically difficult. Health departments in four states, including South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Wyoming, have reported a total of 81 cases among people who attended the super spreader. North Dakota and Washington have also reported infections to South Dakota health officials, who I dare say probably, they are at the very least handcuffed and hamstrung, because you got a governor out there, Kristi Noem, who is so thoroughly, Well, she's Christy Noem, human suppository, going right up the old fundament of Donald J. Trump. And so anybody who calls themselves a public health official in South Dakota is practicing their craft with one foot in a bucket. Because to this day, Christy Noem opposes any requirement that people wear masks. Stephen Sample went to the rally. He rode back home to Arizona last week because, you know, Arizona doesn't have any coronavirus. I sat at a bar elbow to elbow with guys. No one was wearing masks. And he went to one hotspot bar, the One-Eyed Jack Saloon. But I ain't had no COVID-19 symptoms. I was thinking about quarantining with the wife, but I decided not to. It's probably a hoax anyway. I added that part. God almighty.
Are you saying you don't want to quarantine with me, Bob?
Oh, honey, I would quarantine with you anywhere, anytime. You doll.
You're so sweet. I love you.
I love it when Agnes comes back.
Hi, everybody.
Everybody says hey.
Send him my love.
Hey to Goober.
Send him my love.
No, I think you just did. So, we'll just keep watching that story as that continues to blow up. Oh, well, thank you, Billable Rick. Billable Rick has awarded me a cowbell. That's for you could perch Kimberly Gargoyle on a cornice and she'd be right at home. Yeah. Hey, let's run over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Bob. It's Mark, the wandering ex-Marine.
What do you know, Mark?
I'm headed your direction, but I'm still way south of you. But actually, I'm considering going to the march this weekend in D.C. I'm not fully committed yet, and I really don't want to RSVP and not show up. Like I would make a difference, but the point is that there'll be I imagine quite a few people there Friday and Saturday. I wanted to ask you, it sounds like you're feeling better. Am I right in that, Bob?
Yeah, I am. There's nothing like a few days of ibuprofen and water for settling whatever it is that was ailing me.
I've listened to you so long now that, I can hear in your voice, your fatigue, I can hear a lot in your voice now over time, just listening to you. So I wanted to express my hearing up. The other night when you didn't feel well, I felt bad for you. And so it's like, I have a hard time saying listen, but you did a great job of handling your show. And so that's a sign of a true pro. So,
well, thanks, Mark.
You're welcome. And you're really therapy for yourself, and you're really therapy for all that listen to you because your values are based. You're value based, so any case, and you help us all get back to ground. So, but I wanted to make a comment because all of these shootings, it's hard for me. Like I didn't watch the shooting that took place in Wisconsin until I think today. When footage comes out. I can't immediately watch different things because I'm just kind of full of it. Not that I'm, you know, Rambo. It's just I've kind of had enough. I try to drive around the stress, but it gets to a point where I let me see what everybody's talking about. And, I saw a special. It was pretty well done. It was, I don't think it was 48 hours. It might have been 60 minutes, but they're showing that law enforcement training, like everything else in our society now, it's less less humans involved, less instructors, and more videos. And this video training, which I did not experience, and I'm familiar with it. I've been around the machine. I think it's like hitting those golf ball things, you know, and you take a swing at, you know. I think I've actually messed around with it, but not in an official rating capacity. But it didn't really interest me. And a lot of guys that are all into the Rambo stuff, they like those paintball guns. And they used to say, even in the time when I was in the Corps, could we train with them? And I was so glad that, for the most part, there are some Marine units that did. They avoided that. And I think that was good that they did avoid that type of stuff, because you're really dealing with such life and death situations that paintball guns kind of give you a false bravado of your physicality and your victim's circumstance. So I'm glad I didn't mess with that. And I was good at all that stuff. I mean, I'm not, I guess it is bragging, but I had a natural proclivity. I'm an old baseball player, a tennis player, and could throw a punch, and I was a pretty decent pitcher. So I kind of had a lot of good hand-eye coordination, not even bad basketball player. So shooting and things came natural for me. And I kind of had a groovy father who had been a Marine. And he said, "Mark, if you want to own a gun, you're going to have to buy it yourself." He said, "I've seen what guns can do to people, and I don't really care to have one in my house." He said, "But if you think you want one, and you earn the money for it, when you're ready, let me know, and I'll tell you whether you can have it or not, but I'm not going to tell you no." And that's exactly what I did. And that gun was sought after by some guys.
Mark, I understand people's fascination with firearms, because anything of human ingenuity can be the source of fascination. Now, I'm much more likely to be fascinated with various and sundry smoker designs, but you can get real nerdy about them too. I stay in a constant state of conflict with Brother Deacon Asa, because he thinks I, by God, need a pellet grill. And I, by God, don't want a pellet grill. Because if you can set it and forget it, well, just go down to the barbecue joint and get you some.
Yeah, just get it to go anyway.
I want to work on it. I want to fuss over it. I want to be meticulous about how my fire starts and grows and builds and maintains. And I want to be able to smoke a pork shoulder or a brisket or a chicken and be able to look at it and touch it and know when it's done. Because that's mastery. And the gun people are like that too. And a whole bunch of them, I got no beef with them. But the ones I do have a beef with are the ones that are such a bunch of pathetic chicken shits that they can't go down to the Rippy Mart for a bag of ice without packing sufficient heat to take out a fucking platoon.
Yeah, and we're seeing that by design, and I understand what you're saying about the smoker, and I think even as you get attached to one, or you, I think you've actually moved on to another one where you may not have cared for your first one. It's like you said, it's about anything that the humans come up with. If you fall, develop, an interest in it, it can continue to grow. And in your case, you've got air induction and, heat and location, where you actually place the grill. There's a lot of contributing factors that, If you get good at anything, there's a lot of contributing factors, and you can tell somebody that's not messed with it immediately. You can look. I'm not guessing. I know that you could pick something up at the store or ask for something to be cut, and once you get it in your hands, you already know what your mind's already determined what how long it's going to be before you even have to open it up to check it, because of the weight and the type of meat that you've ordered or whatever. A lot of us enjoy listening to you, including myself, listening to you, describe, your cooking, all of your affection for that. And I agree with the gun thing. And I'm not putting people, I'm not saying you said that I was, but the gun thing, I think one of the things I would express to anybody listening, when it comes to what we're witnessing and what's always been out there, it's just being filmed now, which is what they say. And I agree with that. But that, I think one thing that the academies don't teach, and most academies at the longest are 6 months. One thing they don't teach, Bob, and not get it by the time you get out of the academy, but it's communication and it's body language and it's attitude. And I think you can set people off so easily that you can take somebody that's pretty much law abiding their whole lives and really trigger them into doing something that's unlike them normally. And
you've got some expertise in this realm, Mark, and I'd appreciate it. And I realize I'm probably going to be calling on you for speculation. And that's not my intent, but I don't think it's going to be avoidable. What, I mean, can you come up with any justification for law enforcement officers to shoot an unarmed man in the back 7 times?
Okay, so I asked myself that. I actually asked myself that before I watched the video. I'm like, what is that all about? And I actually wrote a friend of mine. He is he's the grandson of a Florida Highway Patrolman who was a pretty reasonable man, it sounds like. He died before I had a chance to meet him. But he did a great job of being a mentor towards my friend. And my friend is a very knowledgeable person about high-speed motorcycles and guns. He knows a shitload more. I'm an operator. I'm not a mechanic. I can drive it, but I could fix it. But so I guess what I had to watch a couple times was to begin with, a gun aimed at someone, whether you've had communication with them or you're just starting it, a gun doesn't. And that wasn't your question, but I'm answering where I'm trying to end up.
That's okay.
In my mind. But when a gun gets aimed at somebody, you've kind of lost control. And then when they take control, you're out of options. And so as he follows the one and two policemen, and actually, if I counted it right, I've seen 5 in the video. And I think that means there may have been 6 altogether, but I'll go conservative. But I counted 5 people in the video in uniform, in short order. And in the original altercation, it looks like 3 or 4. And they follow the gentleman around the car. And he's picking up speed as he's walking. And the dude's, I can't tell.
He's got
I
can imagine because he's got babies in the car. And he's scared.
Well, right.
He's not just scared for his life. He's scared for theirs at this point.
Well, right, like a mother hen, or a father hen, and he's a father rooster, but he has a right to get back to what he's concerned about, and he's been placed in fear. And from what I've read, Bob, that he was actually a peacemaker, not really involved with the original call, that he just.
Right. There was nothing.
Yeah.
He had done nothing with which to be charged. There was no apparent violation of any aspect of any criminal code.
So out of the blue, this gentleman's now suddenly the focus of the whole circumstance. And he's walking. And as you watch at the very end, the one cop almost bumps. Or maybe does bump his partner out of the way, and he grabs him by the flimsiest of tank tops. So that cop, to begin with, shouldn't have had his weapon out. As the gentleman's fleeing, your gun aimed at them is really slowing you down from getting to an appropriate response. So if he's reaching, if in their mind that person was reaching for something, if you have a gun in your
hand. So is that, wait, that just dawned on me. Is that going to be the justification? We thought he had a gun in the car.
Get away with it?
We thought he had a gun in the car.
No, I'm not saying that. No, what I'm saying is the way they explained it at the academy is when a human being is standing in front of you, a subject, a suspect, an individual that you've come in contact with, as that human being is facing you in uniform, that human being has a plane of glass through it, right through the shoulders, through the head, through the chest, and until that plane of glass is broken and coming towards you with a deadly weapon as a gun coming towards you, at that point, you have the authority to use deadly force at that point. But until that occurs, you do not. So not only has he not broken the plane of glass, if he was reaching for a weapon, it's away from the cop. So he was never in, like you've heard people say, and I would agree with that interpretation, the policemen, and I think you said it, the policemen were not in fear of being harmed at that time. They would have to wait for him to be successful at that. So my experience, having done the job, tells me what you do is you reholster your weapon as he's expediting to his vehicle, and if you can't stop him with a taser, which those were before my time, you grab him and you grab both wrists, and if the other useless cop can't help, well, that's life in the slow lane. But the point is, you have to have those skills, because otherwise you end up with death. And we have to have, if you don't have the ability to snatch somebody up, and you can't grab somebody by a stupid tank top, that's about as grabbing somebody by a Kleenex. So you have to grab them by the wrist, and then ensues a struggle. But that's why it's incumbent upon you to have physical skills to do the job. Unfortunately, it can be a rough line of work. I'm not criticizing people in uniform arbitrarily, but my experience was, and I've had situations where I've dealt with people, and by my communication skill in a nighttime stop in on the edge of Little Havana in Miami at 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning, when we pulled somebody over, we knew they were up to no good in a Volvo, a used Volvo, and they were rolling through the area. So we knew something wasn't right. And so my partner pulls them over, or I pulled him over, or whatever the case was. And my communication skill allowed me, as I'm looking at him, he didn't realize I had my gun aimed at him as I reached between his legs through either an open door at that point. I don't think I exposed my whole chest to him, so I don't think I reached in. But I reached in between his legs and pulled out a .45 and just calmly tucked it in behind my back in my belt. We were going to let him go for whatever the reason was, because he had a decent attitude. He was a bad guy, and he was rolling with protection. But I guess the point is, you have to have physical skills, not just shooting skills, and you also have to have communication skills to prevent having to use the physical skill, unless you're dealing with someone who has mental, temporary or permanent mental instability, and then they're not going to recognize.
In which case the police are exactly the wrong people to be there. You need mental
right,
if,
so
you,
we
you need mental health professionals.
Right.
And by the way, Dave, right. Dave number 11 just told me, Mark, part of the cop narrative is that Blake said he was going into the car to get a gun and he was brandishing a knife.
Well, you know,
that smells like bullshit to me.
Yeah. Well, where's the gun? And where's the knife? Because I've looked at the video a few times. I don't see a knife. Now, if he's got a knife, a pocket knife, so you just can't shoot somebody because they're in possession of a knife. Now, if it's in their hand and they're coming at you, that's different. Or he's turned and he's got it, and it's a standoff. At that point, it becomes debatable with you, depending on.
Yeah, I don't care if, to quote W.C. Fields, he has an assegai, he's not much danger with his back turned to him.
Totally agree. Even if, now, if you think about it, now I didn't see a knife in his hand, and people are saying that in different comments on different things, and I scroll past them. I'm not going to argue with every hillbilly that justifies every murder that takes place. not the good hillbillies, the bad hillbillies.
Not all hillbillies, you know, yes, I know.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm playing.
I know. That's the Jimmy Carter hillbillies I love. I would die for and almost did. And would gladly serve President Carter any day. But, so I don't know. That's the narrative. And they once they get that down, that becomes the statement. It's just like the lawyer for Chauvin's partner, the Oriental looking policeman in Milwaukee or Minneapolis, or he was commenting on the Chauvin person himself. But I listened to him, a lawyer, his defense lawyer, and he floated it on the news that he said that they had been trained, and then he showed a little photograph, some kind of, they probably scoured training manuals from here to who knows where, and got a photograph of how to detain a subject that's on the ground with your knee in that similar position, which is not what occurred. That was one of his comments, and then that got shown on the news. And then he said they were just holding him until the medical people got there. And I thought, now, you know, that would fool a lot of people. But unfortunately, the medical people had to fight to get the cops off of them, and they were there for, I think, 3 minutes and a minute and a half where they struggled with the cops to get the hell off him and get away from it. And the one nurse that was there, an off-duty nurse, argued with them right on the spot. So that's a bullshit line, and, of course, the defense will be able to hopefully take care of that, most coach. But any case, it's just it's a rough line of work. They lost control of the situation, and aiming a gun at somebody that's upset doesn't mean crap, and especially to people who've grown up in rough areas. Aiming a gun at people is really shows a cop a rookie side. I don't know, man. I have my gun out, and I aimed it at people sometimes without them knowing it. Or I had it down by my leg as I walked up to your car, but I'm turned at an angle with my diplomatic left hand asking for a driver's license. But my weapon was in my hand, and you may never have seen it. I had a Secret Service. Caucasian Secret Service agent flag us down in Little Havana at 3 o'clock in the morning one morning, and my Puerto Rican American Army partner, who was probably one of the most aggressive cops in the whole city of Miami Police Department, the two of us made good partners because tactically we kept up with each other. He had more experience on the street. I did surprise him a few times, but Carlos. I said, Carlos, did you see that dude back there? He goes, what dude? And I go, that white guy standing in the corner right there. He goes, oh, bullshit. And I go, I'm telling you, bro, go back. Well, we went back, and we rolled up on a guy. Well, I wore a baseball cap sometimes, or no hat at all. But I had it on because it was cool out, and I took the stupid hat off and put my pistol in it because I didn't know who this guy was. He walked up to the car quite bravely. And so my gun is aimed at him. He doesn't realize it. He's talking to Carlos, who's driving the squad car. So, but I was diplomatic and casual. But the gun, I'm just sharing with the audience, guns don't really influence the situation. And case in point would be what we witnessed there in Kenosha. That gun isn't going to influence him, and did so. It does look like another case of negligence at minimum. So I don't know what the charges are.
We don't even know if they're going to be charged. But and in Wisconsin, it's an entirely different story than in Minnesota, where, you know, at least you've got Keith Ellison in the Attorney General's office. Let me ask you a second question, if I may. And this is about because I'm thinking about seven rounds.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at that.
No, I'm wondering, are these, and I'm sure it varies from department to department, do police officers get to choose what kind of rounds they'll carry? Or is that departmentally mandated?
No, they do not, and it is usually departmentally mandated. It's a and you described it earlier. It's an acceptable round that the city and the lawyers and the administration agrees to, and that's what you will be found carrying. And there are cases where the police will carve up bullets, or they will carry their own ammunition, carry throw down weapons. I know that to be a fact. I did not do that. I did carry a backup knife, a nice straight blade Gerber in my combat boot. And I also carried the same Gerber knife in my vest sometimes.
I'm asking because
shock blade. Yeah.
You know, most departments, I think it's safe to say, no longer do, like, well, back in the day, the West Virginia State Police carried, and most departments carried a 357 Smith and Wesson 357 mag, you know, walnut handle, classic.
Correct. Correct.
But then they moved over to, I think, a 40 Smith, which, of course, is roughly a 10 millimeter bullet. A little bit more kinetic energy in the bullet because it's slightly bigger than the 9 millimeter, which is basically the same as a 38 caliber bullet. And I know this sounds like we're kind of off in the weeds, but I'm off in the weeds for a reason.
No.
I'm off in the weeds for a reason, Mark.
Yeah.
Because some bullets do more damage than other bullets. And in fact, ammunition manufacturers go to great lengths to explain how much more damaging their rounds are. I did some research a little while back and I was looking at 9 millimeter bullets because I was trying to figure out, again, 7 rounds. That seems even if it was some sort of horrifying situation, it seems excessive unless there was, you know, shots about to be fired or something, which is clearly not the case here. But you can take a 9 millimeter round, full metal jacket. And I think most people probably know what that means. It's a lead core with a complete jacket of copper around it, and literally a typical rounded bullet nose. And those things will exit a 9 millimeter pistol well in excess of 1,200 feet per second. And because they're jacketed, they tend to go through people. Well, there are manufacturers who make ammunition expressly for law enforcement, and their sales pitch is that this thing is not going to just go through somebody. It's going to go into them, and it is going to tear the living bejesus out of everything it touches. Bone, organs, blood vessels, muscle, what have you. And has a debilitating, and they brag about the debilitating effect. I mentioned, you know, like 115 grain 9 millimeter bullet. There's a company called Hornady. And they manufacture something for law enforcement called a critical duty. And that little bastard is a 145 grain jacketed hollow point with a notched nose, and they actually fill in the hollow point with a flat ballistic tip. So that thing's going to, the size of the bullet reduces the muzzle velocity below 1,000 feet per second to the point where it's actually manifesting a speed more in line with a 45 caliber bullet. And because it's 30 grains heavier than the ordinary full metal jacket 115 grain, it tears, and because that hollow point is filled in with that ballistic plastic, it's ruinous to be struck by one.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering if at some point in the overall discussion of policing, the issue of ammunition itself should come into the discussion. I mean, hell, seven rounds of 115 grade 9mm full metal jacket is not going to be a walk in the park. But in those...
Right, and one thing you're not... Yeah.
I was going to say, you know, but those things can be hole punches, yeah. and they're going so fast, they just all the way through. And they are... Right, It's almost obscene to talk in these terms, but they create a more survivable wound. But because
a more what type of
a more survivable wound, but they
oh,
all but
okay,
by
yeah.
by
okay.
virtue of the fact that they can pass right through a human body, that puts anybody behind the bullet or you know behind the victim at risk of being shot. As an innocent bystander.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, the liability of a fast moving round also, right?
But if you hit a human being with seven rounds of one of these ultra modern, ultra high tech, super penetrating, you know, they literally mushroom and they have teeth when they mushroom
sure.
and they go through like a meat yeah. grinder at 800 feet per second. And I
wondered who saved him. Yeah.
I just wonder if that is a manifestation yeah. of not just an unnecessary use of deadly force, but a willfully unnecessary use of deadly force.
Well, I think you could take a look at that. And I think one way to determine that is how, if in fact, you know, those were the types of rounds used and also the, how widespread it is in the industry or the business, so to speak. The air marshals, I guess, have a round that's designed for being shot within an airplane. So it hits you and doesn't come out and sink the airplane. So, you know, there is that option, I suppose. And of course, but then the argument is, you know, it's in the militarization of law enforcement over the last 40 or 50 years. It goes back to the 60s with SWAT, and Los Angeles, and everything else. It militarized the police and policification of the armed forces. And we're just going to say one thing, Bob, because it kind of confused me at first. Did the one policeman shoot seven times? But no, I think what it was simultaneous fire, which is what you'll see. From going to shooting all the time with your fellow cop, you get simultaneous shooting. And I think they do that to kind of cover each other. Let's just shoot this guy so much that nobody will have a story to tell the truth.
Oh, Jesus Christ. And it's Julius Caesar all over again. Because,
right. let's all stab him. Right.
Right. Everybody has to stab him because that way nobody can be individually liable.
Correct. Correct. And they do that. They do that. And I know that. And then the Marines have language for that. And it doesn't always apply, but weapons discipline, you know, so.
Yeah.
But that doesn't always apply. But, you know, well-trained people can make a difference. But it can also make you vulnerable.
Did you happen to run across the story? Because, you know, in America, anything is possible, especially if it's monumentally fucking stupid. There is a trend, Mark, and this is probably going to make you just run out into the night, eating dirt and running rabbits and barking like a squirrel.
Yeah.
There is a thing in America now where because people who know how to handle firearms have been so... They're actually vigilant. I know this sounds crazy to some, but it won't to you, I don't think. You know, Marine, law enforcement, firearm discipline.
Yeah. Right.
In the circles where people talk about firearms, nothing will get you ganged up on faster than posting a photograph of yourself holding a firearm with your finger on the fucking trigger. You know,
correct,
like Patty McCloskey, yes, did there in St. Louis. You know, that famous photo
with
of
the
her.
Mustard on her shirt. She, correct.
It, yeah. Right. Yeah. She's got her finger through the trigger guard on the trigger.
Just looking at that picture makes me nervous. I can see it shaking. I have to look at that picture about three times to make sure. Is that damn thing moving? Is that thing shaking at me? I'm like, what the hell?
Exactly. So.
What a fucking idiot.
So in these various internet fora, the response, and I know I use the term satirically sometimes, but the responsible gun owners will just they will just rain seven shades of vicious hell on these assholes who present photos of themselves holding firearms with abysmal firearm discipline.
Correct. Yeah, it is.
And so now there's a.
Yeah.
And so now, Mark, and this is the part where you run out and run rabbits.
Okay.
Now, a thing has developed where people proudly post photos of themselves holding firearms with bad weapon discipline. You know, with their finger through the, you know, through the trigger guard, on the trigger, et cetera. And it's a fad now to post those things. Sort of as a, nah, nah, you can't make me, fuck you. So, not long
and
back.
It's being done intentionally, okay?
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
It's all intentional. It is the firearm equivalent of refusing to wear a goddamn mask. That's exactly what
right.
it is. So not long back,
right?
One guy said, you can't make me have good weapons discipline. I got Second Amendment rights. It's right there in the Constitution. Was all proud because he was going to post a photo of himself with his freedom protector, with his finger on the trigger. And just as he went, and he was going to show what a real badass he was, by pointing it at his crotch.
Excellent.
So he goes to take the photograph, and I guess there's a little left-right sort of conflict going on, and apparently he's getting ready to click the button on the phone to take the picture of himself pointing his fucking gun at his fucking dick. And he goes to take the picture, and all of a sudden the gun goes, bang! And he shoots his dick off.
Oh, good shot! Damn.
Took out Big Jim and one of the twins.
Well, it's a seeing eye dog that's no longer with us. But
Wait, hold the fuck
I'm
on.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. It's terrible. It's horrifying.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Jesus Christ, yeah, when you're trying to do it and you succeed to own the responsible gun owner libtards, holy shit!
You've got all the time in the world to do it. Really, you would think. I mean, what's the rush? Let's get this right. And I'll just show you. And that's sad. It makes me happy. I ran into people in the short time I did the job, Bob, that were so they were like groupies. They scared me in a different kind of way, but they feared me. I mean, they didn't fear me, but I'm just saying they bothered me. I'm like, get the fuck out of here with that stupid radio and your fucking guns. And, I'm like, I couldn't even see out of a gas station, set of windows, Bob, in Miami by the old Orange Bowl. There had been a shootout that lasted quite a while. There was so much blood on the inside of the windows of that gas station. I had to wipe a little bit of the blood off a lot of the blood that was on the phone just to pick it up because I wanted to call my girlfriend, who's now my wife now, some 40 years later, 30 some years later here. But, and just to hear her voice, she's, where are you calling me from? I'm like, well, I'm in Miami, Chris. I'm downtown, but I guess the thing there's so much bizarre shit out there that it's I was in the station one night and I see this a B shift guy. I work C shift from 9 at night till 7 in the morning. There was a B shifters. They come in and then they get off like at we overlap. So I think they get off at 2 or 3 in the morning. So they're on the streets at peak hours. I didn't know the guy, and I go, "What you got there?" And he goes, "You want to see? Take a look." And it was a violin case, and he was turning it into property and opened it up, and it was a chrome Thompson submachine gun with a drum in. I mean, you could comb your hair. And I go, "What's the deal with that?" And he goes, "Bro, we were chasing this guy in Liberty City, and he dropped it." And he goes, "We picked it up. We didn't catch him, but we got the gun." And I go, "You're shit." He goes, "Check it out. They have so many guns. And they're not the only department that does it, but they take them out once a year and they drop them in the ocean in big cages. I don't know what the size of the, like 8x8 cages.
Man, I bet the salt water's hell. I bet the salt water's hell on that chrome.
Oh my God. Yeah, sure it is. Sure. And actually I was about to parkerize finish and I wipe my weapon down constantly because of the humidity there.
But, yeah, and the salt air.
And I was in the salt air. I mean, you could it just didn't take any time at all. We would ride with the air conditioning on high with our windows down, so you could hear which direction shit was coming from. I mean, people when you for 20 years in the union, I really never mentioned that I wore the uniform. But I did over time towards the end of my time as a carpenter, people would ask, and I'm like, yeah, I did. I worked. And, but people, the law abiding citizens have no idea how wide open it's been and continues to be, I'm sure. I'm not defending,
yeah, but Jesus Christ, not to minimize anything, but it ain't like Kenosha, Wisconsin is Coral Gables.
Well, right. Yeah.
Is it?
Or, yeah. No. It's, Coral Gables would be the nice area, but I know what you meant. I think you meant like Little Havana or Overtown or a rougher area, Liberty City.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. I wouldn't.
Right.
I wouldn't know. I've been through a couple of times, but that's about it.
Yeah. Well, Coral Gables is also butts right up the University of Miami, and some of the most horrendous crimes have taken place there, but they're not, it's not, it's just, it's a very rare place to see the horrendous crime. But we had a cop shot there, and a robbery of a jewelry store, and they shot him in the neck, and he was a canine officer, and his dog, it was in the back seat, flipped out, and I think they had to tranquilize the dog just to be able to get him out of the car, because it had lost its mind, and I think the policeman died, but the bad guy got away, and that was like at 2 or 3 in the afternoon. It was so many war stories. I mean,
you'll find this interesting, yeah. Mark. I just got a note from Unbillable Rick. He says I was in Vietnam after My Lai. We had rules of engagement. We couldn't just fire at anybody we wanted to, and if we violated the rules, we could be prosecuted under the UCMJ. And that was for a time of war. We had to determine if the people were a threat. The police should have the same rules.
Yeah, let's start there. I mean, and it's under similar circumstances.
There's a larger issue there, and I've talked about it in the past. Maybe we need something similar to the UCMJ for law enforcement. You don't get to don't get to take advantage of the laws that apply to civilians who don't necessarily have the training or the experience that you do. Maybe you're judged
by a great observation.
You're judged by a higher standard.
I think that's a great observation. Now, to a degree, the laws aren't applicable, but and that's not what you're saying, but whenever there's a questionable case, the state will investigate, and that's no news to yourself. But in Florida, it's the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, or South Carolina, you know, it varies per se, obviously. That's not what you're saying. But I agree, there should be national standards with a national review and a national set of
I've come to the conclusion, Mark, that nobody who, you know, your local county prosecutor should never be allowed to prosecute a cop or take a cop to a grand jury.
Conflict of interest.
Because
it is an
explicit conflict of interest. We need individual state level. You know how we've got the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court, and that's all they do.
I understand that. Yeah.
We need judges who all they do is hear cases involving police or law enforcement, and we need a prosecutor.
That makes sense.
We need prosecutors who have absolutely nothing to do with law enforcement. They need to be absolutely neutral and insulated and untouchable. They need not to be subject to pressure tactics or anything from like police unions or any of that. And that's the only way that I think we can ever approach justice. I mean, the fact that the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky is an out and out proud maggot, and this is the guy in charge of determining whether to charge three cops who murdered Breonna Taylor in her bed? Oh, fuck, no. Come on, man.
Well, that's the results of that. That's what we're looking at. That's why that is what it is. I agree. That's a neat take, Bob, and it only makes sense. I mean, when I left, they asked for an evaluation. They asked you why you're leaving the department. I just said, poor leadership. I got into a situation with a racist cop in Liberty City.
Yeah, we talked about that.
He got in over his head. And then when the sergeant showed up, he was a bigger redneck than my partner. And I went, I'm fucked. But I won my case. But, you know, I guess the point is, I couldn't call him out by name and I couldn't bring charges against him. But it was like there was no body for you to appeal to. Whereas in the armed services, within the armed forces, there is. Of course, you would have to be caught in the system somehow, but there's an appeal system to where you can kind of get your case heard, adjudicated one way or the other, so you can move forward or sideways or backwards. But it doesn't really exist, and it is cousins and cocksuckers, and then that's what leads to the constant corruption and that's why it doesn't seem to improve. I like the idea, and it should be national. There isn't any national standards. It should be national hearings, and there should be civilian review boards as well. I'm a big fan of that, and I think they do try to have that in place in some places. But any case, you may have another caller, Bob. I just wanted to call and let you know that communication is what sets people off, and I don't think. That's part of what's happening. And I think when people get pulled over, they're not intimidated anymore, and they shouldn't be. But the cops are all myths because they're so iconoclastic. Is that the right word? Where they're just all into themselves in their own tunnel, that they think everybody's either out to get them or they're supposed to be feared or that they are somebody. And they are somebody. They're a public servant. But that's the extent of it.
And you know who they have to thank for all that fear, Mark? The National Ruble Association, because it's the NRA that has for years encouraged, everybody got to have a gun. Only way to have a civil society is if everybody's got 72 freedom protectors.
And right, Israel.
And the thing is that means that thanks to that, in states like Florida and West Virginia, you know, places where the NRA holds great sway. That means there is no no longer is there any such thing as a routine traffic stop. Every stop is a potential gunfight because of the paranoid
correct.
Bloodthirsty rhetoric that has flowed like a goddamned open sewer from the NRA.
That's correct.
Since Nixon ran for re-election. Because that's literally about the same time that it starts. Yeah.
Sure. And when I first got to Miami, Bob, they still had armor-piercing rounds that you could buy legally from gun shops. You'd go in and get them. They were American. You could Czechoslovakian, and they made another one like in Colombia. And so I wore a baked ceramic plate on my chest because it would stop one round, but two rounds, you would be dead with one round from the trauma. But they made those illegal on a city scale shortly after
And I'm sure somebody, the NRA lobbyist in Tallahassee had a blue, purple, polka-dotted scream and hissy fit when they did. Oh, they're stealing our freedom!
They're stealing my freedom! My constitutional! Hey, Bob, I gotta let you go. I appreciate you asking me the good questions, and it sounds like you've given things some thought that only make a whole lot of sense.
No, I sit around thinking about this stuff all the time. Well, Mark, let me let you know this conversation has meant a lot to folks. I had a lovely note from Jude in the Great Northwest. She said that your perspective on the use of armed violence it really touched her, and moments of being caught in the height of emotional stress and yet unable to shift into your own personal ability to be disciplined. She says, good discussion, you two. So, you know, Mark, you touch people. You touch people.
Well, and Jude, stay safe out there, and we're keeping an eye on the area, and watch out for the Blue Lives Matter people. The current director of Proud Boys for the United States is a Cuban-American named Enrique Chario. And he's been floated out there. He hasn't been out there recently, to my knowledge. But he has been featured. He's the national person. He comes out of the state of Florida. And it's orchestrated by right out of the White House, a lot of this. So
no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you go. And thank you, Mark, for calling in. I really appreciate the conversation. You take care, my friend. Stay safe.
All right, Bob. Have a good dinner.
I'm right after the show. Later. Our buddy Mark, calling from parts unknown. Sometimes I know where Mark is. Sometimes I don't. But I really appreciated the conversation because one of the things that Jude mentioned earlier that she's trying to sort of pull together into a cohesive narrative is the crap that happened over the weekend in Portland, wherein the cops stood idly by while the fascist bully boys, you know, the Boogaloo boys and the Proud Boys, those assholes, went about the business of beating the hell out of anybody that they decided needed the hell beat out of them. And the cops just sat there and, da-da-da-da, lovely day, whatever. And only acted if they were acting against one of the enemies of these fucking brown shirts. Yeah. So it's pretty much time to get out of here. I'm sorry I screwed up the podcast. Oh, Jesus. But at least we got an hour's worth. If you're wondering where the other 2 hours were, I think I explained it at the beginning or what will be the beginning of the podcast. One last thing, since we're all probably getting ready to go and watch as much of the shit show as our guts will allow us to tolerate. You know, we don't have to accuse the maggots of being who they are. In true Maya Angelou form, they'll just tell us. So, tonight, a woman named Marianne Mendoza is on the speaking schedule. She is what is referred to as an angel mom. That means one of her children died. And in her case, her status as an angel mom was established because a drunk driver killed her son in 2014. But wait, there's more. The drunk driver who killed her son was in the country illegally. Okay. Well, just as we talked earlier about Mark and Patty McCloskey destroying the beehives there on the other side of the wall at the synagogue, imagine the effort that that took. You had to go all the way out, all the way around the wall, and then smash the hell out of a beehive. Nice people. Well, Mary Ann Mendoza, it turns out, is a QAnoner. And an anti-Semite. Good for her. No. It's just, it's who they are. It's who they are. So this evening, she'll wave the bloody shirt. But today, she tweeted a thread from a QAnon account. But not just any QAnon account. This thread was all about the Rothschilds and how they're gonna make the Goyim destroy each other, and the Jews are gonna rob the Goyim of their landed properties. That's a quote from the thread. Malevolent Jewish forces in the banking industry are out to enslave non-Jews and promote world wars. Riddled with QAnon references, the thread from Twitter user at WarNews, WARNUSE, said, "The Jews sank the Titanic to protect the Federal Reserve. And every president since JFK has been a slave president to the global Jewish cabal." And, of course, it wouldn't be a truly hateful anti-Semitic QAnon screed if it didn't include a reference to the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. Funny how things we talk about on this program wind up being reality. We were talking about the protocols of the learned elders of Zion just the other night. It was originally created by the secret police of the Tsar and eagerly picked up by the Third Reich. And here we are in 2020, and the damn thing still won't go away. And by the way, in the same thread, the story's over at Daily Beast if you want to look it up, Mary Ann Mendoza. Hillary Clinton's a satanic high priestess. Barack Obama's connected to the devil. And so, there, today, Angel Mom Mary Ann Mendoza tweeted, "Do yourself a favor and read this thread." And, of course, the usual cannibal, pedophile, cult, sex trafficking. And Donald Trump will bring them all down. No word from the MAGAT campaign on their plan to advance an unabashedly anti-Semitic voice. Jesus, it just gets more and more sickening. Since there's only 1 hour of podcast, one more thing. From the Department of, I don't know how you're going to keep dinner down when you hear this. When he finally got back around to saying, yeah, okay, I did resign. Cucky Jerry did so, saying that it was just time for him to be away from FU, Falwell University. And in regard to stepping down as president and chancellor of the U, I couldn't make this up in a million years. I wouldn't even dream of it. He quoted and said he was quoting. He said, "As I deal with all this, I can't help but think. I can't help but recall the words of Martin Luther King. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last." Yes, Jerry Falwell Jr. thinks that getting caught watching his wife have sex with a young pool boy is exactly the same as African-American people being denied constitutional civil rights and murdered at will by white mobs over the course of centuries. Exactly the same thing. Oh, and him quitting FU? Yeah, it was a hard thing. But $10.5 million will take the sting out of everybody on earth knowing that you're a weird little cucky boy who likes to watch your wife have sexy time with other men. Because that's probably what Liberty University is going to have to pay Cucky Jerry for the privilege of being shed of him. Once upon a time, there were contracts that had these things called morals clauses in them, but I guess one of the biggest evangelical Christian universities in America ain't never heard of such a thing as a morals clause. Yeah. Yeah, all right, so we finished the evening at 2:35 to go. Sorry about the podcast again, some more. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you to our subscribers, Patreon and PayPal. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you so very much. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. It's good that I am wrapping things up because it's thundering outside and the rickety cold fried, held together by spit toilet paper and baling wire, Appalachian power grid, it may go down at any minute. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Hey, thank you to Les for the cowbell for seeing eye dog. I awarded one right away. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. You know, just last month was the 15th anniversary of Gina's passing. So, by all means, please stay safe. Stay home if you can. If you have to be out and about, wear your mask, wear your gloves, wash your hands, don't touch your face. Maintain your social distance. And if it so happens that you see somebody coming at you, burbling about Jewish beehives, avoid that maggot like the plague. Because they are. Later, y'all.
Mm-hmm.